Hello, everybody, and happy Wednesday to you, and welcome to 49ers Live. I'm Joe Fan, joined by my esteemed co-host, Ted Robinson. Ted wasn't as good in Week 2 in the preseason as it was in Week 1. Lots to work on ahead of the Vikings game this weekend.
Yeah, that, I mean, look, what everyone wants to see, what everyone is expecting to see, who cares about the 49ers, who follows football, is that Kyle Shanahan's offense can blossom and bloom. That's what I think everyone's expecting. His cred is through the roof. And when you can't run consistent plays cleanly, right, when we can't snap the ball without shifting, without formation problems, let alone the turnovers, that's a whole different, that's a physical issue. But the inability to make sure that you can consistently run plays cleanly, it negates all of Kyle's play calling expertise. As we all, you know, it's simple to say, but it's true. Second and 15, third and 14, I mean, all those long down and distance situations that we have seen, those become very handcuffing for an offensive coordinator.
We'll save you the gory details, but here's a rundown of what happened at Levi's Stadium on Saturday night against the Broncos. These teams meet each and every year. They had two joint practices last week leading up to this game. Again, opening the doors of Levi's Stadium in 2017. Third and goal here, C.J. Anderson putting the Broncos on the board. That comes after a punt mishap by Jaquaski Tart, first of what would be five turnovers. Three straight on 49ers possessions. A fluke fumble here from Brian Hoyer. Nonetheless, it is a turnover, and the Denver Broncos recover that empty hand rule. Brian Hoyer said this never happened to him in his career, at least not for quite some time. Here's another fluky play. Marquise Goodwin unable to corral the pass, thrown a little bit behind him, and it's intercepted by the Broncos. Once again, three straight possessions for the 49ers, ending in turnovers. They'd have five in all. Here's C.J. Beathard getting it going a little bit in the second half off a play action. This is to open the third quarter. It's Aldrick Robinson. Another long catch and run. He had one against the Chiefs as well. That goes for 39 yards. On the very next play, again, play action rolling to his left. In the left flat, it's George Kittle. The Iowa connection. Dump trucks one guy. The stone cold Steve Austin celebration in the end zone after walking the tightrope on the sideline. The Iowa connection is very real in San Francisco. Game out of reach at this point, it's 33-7, but Victor Bolden Jr. fighting for a roster spot. Makes it 33-17, 104-yard kickoff return touchdown. Ted, I know the entire night wasn't what we had hoped. Again, reopening the doors of Levi's Stadium, but a nice note to end on for the undrafted rookie.
Yeah, start with the ending there, Victor Bolden. And this has been a theme that we've talked about around here the last couple of years. The 49ers have not had a real return game since Ted Ginn was here. And Ted Ginn was premier, there's no question, as a threat that any time he touched the ball on a punt return or kick return, he was a threat to go. That hasn't been here. So someone like Victor Bolden, Raheem Mostert has also gotten a lot of chances to do that the first two preseason games. They have an opportunity to perhaps earn a spot through that ability to be a big play return guy. And then I'll go back to the beginning, Joe. And Hoyer, to me, if you were just running a clean sheet of good plays, bad plays, there are more good for Hoyer. I mean, he threw some nice balls, a couple of third down hookups with Goodwin.
I mean, he completed 8 of 11 passes for 89 yards.
The problem is the bad plays. Yeah. Not every play's equal. We know that. So the turnovers crush. And Goodwin, the throw to Goodwin was a little bit behind, but still Marquise had his hands on that ball. You hope he holds it, let alone have it be picked. It could have fallen to the ground and been incomplete. The empty hand, you know, the slip of the ball. Those are crushing plays. And it all started at the very beginning with the worst mistake in football. Bill Walsh used to preach this vividly. The worst mistake is a mistake on a punt. No turnover changes field position other than a pick six, obviously. No turnover changes field position like a messed up punt play. And so when that ball inadvertently hits Tart, that gave Denver a quick seven to start.
And you got to hope that some of these are just either early season jitters or getting back into the swing of things. Talked to John Lynch on the debut of the 49ers Studios podcast that just came out this morning. John Lynch said it's never as good as you think, never as bad as you think. That's the famous line from coaches and GMs. After a win, it's never as good as you hope it is, and after a loss, it's never quite as bad. And like you said, with Brian Hoyer, you saw him get into a little bit of a rhythm, and we'll hear from Brian Hoyer. Kyle Shanahan and Brian Hoyer will address the media from the auditorium today. Directly following 49ers Live, we will go live up until they go to the podium in just a couple of minutes. That's going to happen about 10 minutes from now. You did see progress, right? You saw that connection with Marquise Goodwin where he's getting open, different kinds of routes. Three catches for 44 yards. Obviously, the one target that he didn't grab, you know, was another chunk play. And so you at least see the chemistry there. Now it's putting it together.
Yeah. Two games we've seen Aldrick Robinson, right? We've seen why Aldrick Robinson is here, his ability to be a big play guy. We saw George Kittle on the touchdown. You saw, or at least the fans saw, a flash of what we saw a lot through spring ball and the OTAs. He's going to be on the team, I think, and he's going to be a guy that can contribute. We haven't seen a lot of Garcon, but his record speaks for itself. The other player we didn't see much of Saturday night, but I still suspect is going to be a part of this, is Trent Taylor as the slot receiver, as a potential punt returner. Of course, Jeremy Curley has done both of those roles here. How that winds up shaking out is going to be one of the stories, I think, of the last 2 weeks of camp. But I just think there's enough invested in Trent Taylor to believe that he's going to be a part of this thing. And there's a little look at Trent. And I think it follows up, Joe, to me, what was the story from week one Kansas City, which was this draft class has shown enough. And it's that obviously this is the draft class of the current regime, so there is going to be that dynamic, but they can contribute. And the last thing that we saw, it's been a long time here, and I'm going to repeat this one a lot because I think fans can lose track of this. It's been a long time since this organization drafted and developed a quarterback. 2011, Kaepernick was the last time it happened, right? So C.J. Beathard is a player that we've seen enough of him in the first two preseason games. You get an idea as to why Kyle Shanahan was attracted to him, and there's no question that he's going to be a player. This is going to be a guy who's going to be here. He's going to be part of this thing, and they are going to try to develop him into being an NFL quarterback.
Well, we have two early questions here, and I think these are curious questions. I think hopefully Kyle Shanahan has some answers for them. It's still so early in the week, and Kyle Shanahan has said they're going to approach this week as if it were a game week, as if they're getting ready for the Carolina Panthers in week one, because this is the only chance they get to do so in the preseason. Again, following the game on Sunday, they go right back to that Thursday game to close out the preseason against the Chargers. Thomas wants to know who the second quarterback will be on Sunday. We don't know for sure. We can prognosticate a little bit, and I would say probably Matt Barkley, just given the fact that he didn't get to play, but maybe they decide that maybe the competition's over and C.J. Beathard has won that job. I don't know, but it also, there's going to be limited playing time because you expect the first team offense to probably play the whole first half. I mean, they call that game the dress rehearsal for a reason.
Not to diminish the question at all. I get it, but I don't think it matters is what I'm saying. C.J. Beathard's going to be here.
Yep.
There's just no question in my mind that that's the case. So now the only question is, does this team keep three? Do you keep Matt Barkley to have a veteran presence in case something happens to your starter? Or do you trust C.J. Beathard enough to say if something happens to Hoyer, we'll run the rookie out there? I think that's the question. C.J. Beathard is a future player here. There's no doubt about it. Does Barkley make the team because of his ability to help in the now? I think that's all that's left.
And then this second question from Brian wants to know if Lorenzo Jerome will start again. Another question we're trying to figure out was when Jimmy Ward's going to get back on the field. And Kyle Shanahan said in his conference call on Sunday, Jeff Half is going to put him through the paces again, and hopefully maybe by Wednesday he's off of PUP. We don't have that word yet. It's still not too late. Practice isn't until 1:50, and so there's a possibility that Jimmy Ward comes back. And I think that opens the door for a bigger question beyond just will Jerome start against the Vikings. But if they are in love with Lorenzo Jerome and love him in that spot, all the hype of Jimmy Ward moving to safety throughout the offseason, there is a potential that maybe he could be moved back to cornerback. I mean, there's no doubt that Jimmy Ward's one of the most talented defensive backs on this team. You're going to find a way to get him on the field. But if you feel the same way about Lorenzo Jerome, then you've got to get creative.
Well, there's an interesting thought, Joe. You're sharp on that one. I've been wondering internally the same thing. And on our telecast Saturday night, I asked John Lynch the same question about Jimmy Ward. He said this week. And I know there was the thought when he first went down on that first day of camp to be conservative with Jimmy, to make sure, hey, look, we're not going to aggravate a hamstring and have it be a long-term thing. But I also know the intent was to have him for Denver. Now, they chose not to play him this in game two. Now, if he's going to be ready for game four, the Carolina game, I would think he has to be able to get out there this week. But with the questions, I think, that have to surround at cornerback, and the importance of the cornerback position in this defensive scheme that's being employed, I don't know that that's an outrageous thought that you just presented. Lorenzo Jerome has shown. I mean, he's shown. And I would say I can't fathom there's any doubt that he's going to be on the team right now. In what role, that's the question. And there, if it's a prominent role, do you think about, You know, Jimmy Ward's been a utility piece, you know, and it's unusual for a first-round draft pick to be utilized that way in the secondary, but that's what he's been. Still, he has the ability to plug into separate spots. If you identify cornerback as a need, maybe that is a thought.
And it's interesting. Again, Kyle Shanahan, I'm sure, will be asked about it in just a couple of minutes during his press conference. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with Jimmy Ward. I think you look at the other rookies on the roster. Good to see George Kittle talk about a hamstring injury. Kept him out for about a week. He comes back, has a couple of catches, three catches for, 33 yards, including the 29-yard touchdown, where two Denver Broncos defenders have him dead to rights. Mm-hmm. He runs one over, stiff-arms another, tightropes the sideline, and gets into the end zone. We've been seeing it throughout OTAs and training camp and practice. Nice to see the future of the tight end position in San Francisco really show it in his debut.
Yeah, and I think this is such an important training camp position. So I'm watching it a lot. I think fans who care about the 49ers should watch this position a lot. Just look at all of the advanced studies, the metrics, whatever phrase you want to use. Look at how often Kyle Shanahan ran multiple tight end, three tight end offenses in Atlanta last year. We all know about Kyle's love of the play action and using that to set up pass game. It was brilliant last year with his multiple tight end sets. So you have Kittle, you have Logan Paulson, who is an outstanding blocker, would appear to have value to this roster in that regard. And you have all the returnees. You know, the 49ers tried to get Vance McDonald going again early in the game Saturday. I think mixed results there. You have three guys we know, McDonald, Zelick, Bell, and three new, including the undrafted player Hikutini, who really, I think, you know, the position he played in college, you'd have a hard time calling it tight end the way NFL people call it tight end.
Yep.
So there's a learning curve that he has to go through there.
Yep.
But you've got six players, and there's going to be at least three that are going to be on the roster, if not more. And again, if you just look at what Kyle Shanahan did in Atlanta, you know he wants to use three. And if the play-action game is going to work, he can make it work so well with a good running game and three tight ends.
We're going to get out of here real quick once Shanahan comes, so I want to make sure we don't get cut off in terms of our major keys for the week. And I'll start this one off. And we've talked about Brian Hoyer in the first-team offense in quite depth as we've started the show, but I think it is important to score a touchdown for that group. I just think that momentum going in, they all likely won't play against the Chargers, especially 4 days later from that Vikings game. So this is really it. This is the last chance they get. This is their dress rehearsal for the regular season. And so with so many new parts, we saw glimpses, but still, too often are they behind the chains. Too often are penalties and turnovers hindering those drives. And so it would be nice to see just one drive, march down the field, whether it's Carlos Hyde getting in the end zone. You got to get him going as well. He's struggled to get going so far. And so I think for everybody involved, it would be a nice deep breath, an exhale going into the regular season. So that's what I'm looking for. And you're on the road against a good defense, and so no better time than this Sunday.
And I think you hit a key to me, Joe, for all of this to happen. And we've talked about Hoyer and Garcon and the tight ends, et cetera. For all of this to happen goes back to what we just talked about. Play action doesn't work if you can't run. And the first team in the two games so far has yet to establish ground game. We saw much better ground game in Kansas City with second and third teams, with Joe Williams in, with Raheem Mostert in, even Matt Breida ran the ball well, but with the top team in there. And the other issue that, you know, fans oftentimes, we kind of gloss over the offensive line as a group, there are holdovers in Joe Staley, Daniel Kilgore has been here a long time, Trent Brown's now in his third year, Beatles in his second year. The best years recently in this organization, the offensive line were maulers in the run game, right? And if there was ever a question, it was about pass protection. It seems to be a little bit flipped right now. It seems to be pass pro is okay, but can this group of linemen establish themselves in the run game, and particularly the run game that fits Kyle Shanahan's offense?
If you're waiting to see Kyle Shanahan's live press conference, as well as Brian Hoyer, that should be coming momentarily. We've got word in the auditorium. Once we get that, we will send you over. I think going back to Victor Bold and the undrafted guys, especially at receiver, really interesting conversation where these guys are performing at practice, and the preseason games will never be the end-all, be-all, but it is a nice way to break a tie when you're splitting hairs come roster spots. Victor Bolden's had a nice game. As I hear, Kyle Shanahan is just leaving the practice field. They're getting done with walkthroughs, so he should be there momentarily. So our final thoughts here on the receiver battle, and all of them, again, have played well. Now, Victor Bolden and Kendrick Bourne, the two have played well in preseason games. What's your take?
Some of it's going to be connected to special teams, and I talked to Kyle Shanahan about this Saturday before the game. For example, okay, we talked about the return game and Victor Bolden's ability to contribute there. Here's something else. Covering punts, the outside punt men. One of the best in last year was Aaron Burbridge. And this coaching staff really likes Burbridge for that role too. But Burbridge has an injury, and we're not sure how long he's going to be out. We're not sure if he's going to be able to go much this year. So they need to find people in that role. And Saturday night in Denver, Kyle started auditioning people in that role. One guy that he said was going to do it, and I don't remember seeing him, was Matt Breida. Could Matt Breida be a player? Asa Jackson has tried that. Adrian Colbert, the draft pick safety, was in that role a little bit Saturday. They need to find two people, at least two people, who can shine in that role. And that's an unheralded but very important position in special teams. And to finish from your question, Joe, I asked Kyle point blank, and he said it's very hard to keep a player in his mind who's just a special teams guy. And we've had a few here in the past, Blake Costanzo on the Super Bowl team. Guys that just played special teams.
Nick Ballore.
Nick Ballore primarily, exactly, was that way. Kyle said it's going to be hard for him to do that on the 53. So it's going to have to be people that can contribute both in a position battle and on special teams. So that applies to Victor Bolden. That applies to Matt Breida. That probably applies to Kendrick Bourne. Guys like that that are trying to earn those last spots.
And we're about a week and a half away from final cuts. Again, well, I guess I shouldn't say final cuts. Cuts in general. There is no initial cut. A new rule in the NFL doesn't go from 90 to 75 to 53. Just straight 90 to 53, 37 names on the chopping block. And what's interesting is not just the competitions within a position, but it's how many do you keep at that position and where does that roster spot come from, right? If you keep four tight ends, where does that other position come from? Do you keep one less corner? Do you keep one less receiver? If you decide you have to have Victor Bolden Jr. and Kendrick Bourne or DeAndre Smelter, where does that other position spot come from, right? Because it is a puzzle putting together a 53-man roster, and it's something that they're going to have to it's a very delicate balance, and it's something that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan will have to figure out.
Yeah, Joe, I think we touched a little bit on this last week. One thing that we're learning about Kyle Shanahan, I think that's very obvious, is that he has very clear ideas about the positions and what he wants, the qualities he wants from players in each position. On offense, very clear. And so, yes, if you try, I say, okay, I'm going to keep a fourth tight end. Part of that probably says, can I use one of those tight ends as a receiver? Is it someone who can be a hybrid? We've seen other tight ends in the league. I mean, my gosh, how many teams in the league now are lining up as formations? Three wide receivers to one side and the one tight end alone to the other side. If you have a Rob Gronkowski or the talents of a Jimmy Graham, you can pull that off. Does Kyle Shanahan see that potential in somebody of the tight end group on his team? That may go into helping on that equation. And the other factor is, it's wide receivers, running backs, linebackers, defensive backs. Those position groups, the backup players in those position groups have to play special teams in the NFL. You have to. So, again, that gets into the combination. You're going to keep a third tight end, a fourth tight end, the fourth running back, the ninth defensive back. That has to be a player that plays multiple special teams.
Before we go, and again, Kyle Shanahan could be here any moment, but we haven't touched much on the defense. Did you see improvement from week one to week two?
Well, yeah, the best thing was that given the lousy hand they were dealt in the first half, a couple of times they held. I mean, it's small victories, but they held field goals a couple of times, which was a nice thing. Again, and Denver was the same way. Denver had how many? Six or seven frontline defenders, I think, that didn't play at all. 49ers had frontline defenders not play. So, you know, from that standpoint, you don't use this as an overall blanket judgment. But, yes, there were bright spots on the defensive side. The fact, by the way, that Foster was out there, that whatever little ding he felt in the shoulder during the week of these practices didn't affect him Saturday, was a good sign.
And didn't hear about it after the game
right,
either.
Exactly, Joe. And then there's a little bit of a mini red flag because for the second week in a row, the first quarter wasn't a great quarter for Rashard Robinson. Missed a tackle and run support, or actually I think it was a flat pass, I believe, but you know, the kind of tackle you want your top corner to make. And then the pass interference in the end zone. And it's preseason, so it's not like teams are targeting Rashard, but plays are going at him, and he has to be – here's a guy that has to make those plays. I mean, the 49ers need that guy right there to play like a top corner. You know, basically, he has fallen into that position.
And it's funny when you say he's fallen into it. It's, and not to be an apologist for Rashard Robinson, those are obviously plays that you do need, especially – those plays in the run game where you're getting off the field on third down potentially and he's missing those tackles, they're huge. But it's great. He's 22 years old. It's his second season after not playing an entire year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing the rise of Rashard Robinson and the expectations that have put upon him. I do believe he has the mindset, the skills, and the technique to do so. But I think what you've seen in the preseason, there are certainly going to be growing pains. This guy isn't going to just walk on the field and be Darrell Revis or Richard Sherman.
Well, no, and I think that bar is unrealistic. But these clips we're seeing right here are why people think so highly. Why Rashard, had it not been for off-field questions, would have been drafted more highly than he was. I think he was, a fourth-round compensatory pick, I believe, and that's pretty low for a guy with the skill set of Rashard Robinson at a position that is in such demand in the league. So those clips we just saw from last year, most of those were second half of the season plays and show you why there's thought of him. And, again, the original blueprint was that Tremaine Brock was going to be on one side here, Robinson on the other side. That now ends with Brock going in the offseason. Rashard becomes your guy. And at some point, if this is the way the 49ers line up week one, he's going to go with, I'm assuming he's going to go with the best receiver. And we understand repeatedly the Seattle scheme that Robert Saleh is bringing here, the corners have to play. They don't get a ton of help. And that's why I keep saying, I'm not saying this negatively, I'm just saying it as real as reality. Rashard Robinson knows this himself. The reality is there's a dependence on him to play at a high level.
One more player we haven't talked about in that secondary is Eric Reed. And Eric Reed, I thought, was fantastic. I thought he was the MVP of the game from a 49ers standpoint. I thought he looked like his Pro Bowl self, really at home as that in-the-box safety, helping out in the running game, covering tight ends. You saw him in that play that Lorenzo Jerome almost had the interception. He was right there as well. Both those guys working together, I thought he looked fantastic and looks really, really comfortable in what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, and this is the, again, the bar is unrealistically high, and I say this only as the model, but it's the Cam Chancellor role. Now, Cam Chancellor's the best at it, so there's no expectation of that, but it's the role that Eric Reed will be asked to play here at the start of the season, and he seems very comfortable at it. And it's, it's funny, I was watching the game Saturday thinking to myself as I'm calling it, Joe, this reminded me of Antoine Bethea late in the season last year. Slightly different because the 49ers were so beat up at linebacker that late in the year, and Kyle Shanahan actually talked to me about this Saturday a little bit. It was the game in Atlanta where Bethea got moved up to basically play a linebacker position, and he played very well because he was moving forward. He was going toward the line of scrimmage, and he didn't have to get stressed with moving laterally or running backwards. Those are things that Antoine's point in his career that are not going to be strengths for him. Eric Reed's a much younger guy, but he looked very comfortable playing forward, playing closer to the line of scrimmage, and those are the characteristics that have made Cam Chancellor, as we said, an elite player, the best at that position. If Eric Reed can be part of that, it's huge, a huge plus for the 49ers.
I think we were talking about injuries last week. The Broncos had several. The 49ers did as well on their side of the football. DeForest Buckner, a huge name. Aaron Lynch, another. Those guys, we don't have word whether they'll play this week, where their ankles are at, respectively. Where do you stand on the balance of, do you play your starters, your studs in the preseason or not, especially when they might be already nicked up? We saw it's again becoming a big topic of conversation with the Odell Beckham injury. He's got an ankle as well, questionable to play in week one. It's so delicate, especially with a new regime and guys fighting for roster spots. Yeah. You want to see what you have. But also, I mean, we haven't even touched on this. It wasn't a great game on Saturday, but it was a great game in the sense that there weren't any big injuries.
That is exactly right. That's the biggest takeaway. And I'm going to label this the Reuben Foster question to me. That's how I look at this. How much do you play Reuben Foster, a player who you can already see it? You already see his talent, and you can easily see his value to the team. Does he need reps? Probably. But do you risk his health when that's clearly a question?
Fantastic, Ted. Appreciate it. For Ted Robinson, I'm Joe Fan. This has been 49ers Live. Let's send it over to the auditorium for Kyle Shanahan.